everybody. Welcome back to a brand new episode of Techish. It's me, Abitessi, with my amazing co-host.
I'm amazing now. My Michael Behane, episode 2 in the building. What's cracking?
I'm good. Seasons are changing. It's getting cold, but all that good stuff across the spectrum of tech versus ish is still popping, still happening.
You know what? About you? Let's spill some tea from the jump. Let's just spill some tea.
You know? Wow.
I feel like a little 13-year-old kid sometimes on this podcast because we're spilling so much tea, but you know what? Yeah.
Awesome.
You know what? Next episode, we'll talk about customer acquisition costs and lifetime value. We'll get all serious, but this episode, I want to spill some tea. So obviously, we've talked about this app called Clubhouse. Me and Abba have been on there for a little while. They're starting to open it up now. It was originally like a beta list thing, whatever, where you couldn't get on it. And the last couple of weeks, it's just been an absolute shit show. So the first thing that happened was there was a really anti-Semitic room. I think it was a lot of people of color, actually. And it was about, yeah. You know, it just went left, basically. And it was hella anti-Semitic. And a lot of the Jewish users on the platform were very uncomfortable with it. And that caused a lot of hoopla. Then all of a sudden, Clubhouse started featuring a lot of right-wing, conservative, alt-right adjacent type people in like certain different rooms.
Yeah.
And, you know, you might say, listen, what's the big, you know, hooray? They basically run Facebook and Twitter and all those other apps, whatever, the normal social media apps. There's a large presence of those kind of folks. But the reason why this was so annoying was because Clubhouse has kind of built itself off the back of black and brown people. Like there's a room with there's a room with a lot of like black celebrities. I saw Joe Budden on there. Tiffany Haddish was on there. All kinds of Kevin Hart was on there. Basically, it's
Oprah
backed by
was on there, man. That's what got
Oprah
me back
was on there.
I heard
yeah,
that Oprah
exactly.
And I was like, okay, let me re-download this app. I'm down.
Yeah. So essentially, some similar thoughts happen with Twitter. It's like history repeating itself. The fact that Black Twitter is such an important contingent of Twitter and that helps the user growth. Right. This happened, but in like a microcosm. So essentially, now people are like, yo, what have we done? Like we've kind of helped build up this platform, and it's not black owned. They don't really care about us. It was never really going to be some pro black or brown space. They're going to go whatever you know the growth is. And if you look at talk radio in America, that's pretty much conservative. So like, that's their kind of domain. They're going to come through and own the whole thing, right?
We never learn. I just think I'm so fed up of this argument that tech isn't evil. People are evil. Oh, I've just built a community. Oh, I've just built a platform. It's like you're profiting from people's interactions on your platform. Therefore, you have a duty to safeguard the experience of your users. And we as people, consumers, everybody in tech, fans of it, makers of it, we have to hold ourselves accountable to a higher standard. We've gotten so friggin' lazy and we've become so unethical and completely debased. Like we literally saw Cambridge Analytica and then we're just like, all right, yeah, I guess it's okay. Like, is it okay? Because I just feel like we're kind of letting that behavior be okay and it's just not good enough. And I think with Clubhouse, wow, I mean, look, we've been talking about this for a while. When Taylor Lorenz became a victim of that platform, people completely laying into her. And now we see people who openly speak up against Jewish people and other marginalized communities. I personally am incredibly disappointed to see this happening. I'm more disappointed by the lack of action from the leadership team because it's like, okay, I'm guessing y'all are just high-fiving the Coinbase guy and living in your little bubble of white male privilege that shall never be popped because it's a nice little spot you've got there. But what else can it be? And to that point, I mean, you're so right. Like, I think they've been very performative, always picking as their icon on the app a woman of color.
Yep.
Whilst
talk that talk.
At the same time, when users are flagging abuse, hate speech, etc., nothing is being done.
This episode is sponsored by Nested. They are redefining estate agency in the UK. For too long, sellers have been subjected to unresponsive agents and a completely broken process. With a combination of groundbreaking tech and expert local agents, Nested is fixing the whole moving experience one problem at a time. If you like the sound of their mission, they are currently hiring for a senior data engineer based in the UK, London. The link is in the show notes and please apply.
All I'm trying to say is if a company is not owned by the marginalized people it's claiming to welcome, it's going to be BS. Like there just are no examples I have found so far in tech that can prove otherwise. There are too many organizations out there that start with this vision of, oh my God, we're so inclusive. This is a place where black and brown people are welcome. If you ain't black and brown, you lying. That's how I see it because I just don't see any cases that prove that.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, it's hard to even run the opposite experiment because there's so few black and brown run platforms that get that kind of venture funding and get a chance to scale up in that way. So yeah, I think everything you're saying is true, but it's just like, I just couldn't believe how the naivety of the community, in the sense that like, I would go on there and I would see people on the platform. I'm like, do you work here? Because like, the amount of energy you're putting into this platform, and I get it, you want to build up your personal brand and you want to, you know, hopefully leverage this platform to your own endeavors, right? But I was confused who works here and who's actually just like, you know what I'm saying? Because there was a lot of people doing like, yeah, let me introduce you to this person and let me like show you how it works. And I'm like, rah, that's great. But like, if you don't work here, what's up with the free labor? I don't get it. And it's just, a lot of times it's the same people who are disappointed because they really thought it was going to be some like super inclusive space. I don't know. I just think we've got, as like, this naivety is killing our community. Like, come on, like, let's just keep it real. We knew what it was. It's a venture capital Andreessen Horowitz backed company. What were you expecting? Like, this ain't going to be no revolutionary space. It's not going to be like, anyways. So the next story, it reminds me of why I love technology. I love technology that is inclusive. I love technology that is boundary breaking. I like technology that brings in a group that has been shunned and is now back into the fold. It's called a dating app. And the dating app is for my short kings, all right? Shout out to my short kings, my 5'8". My 5'8" and under brigade. There's an app for you now. Because if you've been out here on these dating apps, I haven't been for quite some time, but I vividly remember every single bio must be 6 foot over. Must be 6 foot over. I saw guys that, and then every guy that I knew that was 6 foot over in their bio was, I'm 6 foot over. Don't worry, I got this basically. And I vividly remember going on one date. And the girl was like, rah, I thought you'd be taller. Bearing in mind, I'm 5'11". I'm average. The definition of average, right? I was kind of crushed. I was like, whoa, I don't know how to like, you know, put my foot forward with confidence. But now technology is here with a solution. So Abba, if you were single, would you download Short Kings app? I put you on the spot right now.
You're gonna make me look all discriminatory and prejudiced and biased. Look, you know,
that's a no, basically. That's a no.
I mean, you know,
I haven't seen you wordless and short of words ever since I've met you. You stuttering everything now. Oh, my days.
Actually, to be fair, there are probably celebrities. I don't know that they're as short as they are, and I have had celebrity crushes on them. So it's all okay. Back to my point, people I have had a crush on. I mean, to be honest, I'm so old, and I've been with my partner like literally nearly a decade, so I miss the dating apps wave and all this cool stuff. But I mean, if that was my vibe, I'd be down for it. Why not? It's hard out there, man. It's hard out there.
Yeah, it is hard out here. And to be honest, in all seriousness, like, I have a few friends that are like on the shorter side, and like, no joke, it really did impact their confidence for a long time until they kind of found security in themselves, you know. And thankfully, you know, they found great partners and they're all good. But like, at one point I was having to like really like gin up the confidence of a few people that was just like, this ain't this dating thing. I don't know how I'm going to keep doing this, right?
Wow. So in all seriousness, were you giving them a pep talk?
Yeah, listen.
You were like, Hitch. Will Smith, channeling your Will Smith.
I have to be, just be yourself. You have to give them that cliche talk. Just be yourself, man. It's all good. But yeah, so in all seriousness, I have seen people be crushed by that kind of thing. And I think this app, to be honest, I think it's more for comedic effect. I don't think it's a serious app. I think it's like a spoof app, unfortunately.
At least you know no one's going to be lying about their height. Or is it yeah, now where people are like, I'm definitely 5'8".
You know what? Yeah, more power to the app developers, more power to everyone that wants to use an app like this. And shout out to all the people who are shout out to people who are attracted to Short Kings.
Oh, nice.
Because without you, you know what I'm saying, the world wouldn't spin, you know what I mean?
Also, so anyways, who gets to pick what's short? Because like, the average height of a man surely is like,
it's 5'10". It's 5'10". I'm aware of that because I'm just above average, so I have that number.
Oh my god.
If I said, yeah, no, I think it's under 5'8", basically, is the thing. Under 5'8", right? But yeah.
How incredibly basic are we that we still care about that stuff? Like,
Who said that we weren't? Who said that human beings have evolved to anything beyond that?
I mean, I'm basic. I know I'm basic, but I'm just saying, surely there are more non-basic people than basic people. Maybe not. Maybe that's why the world is the way it is.
Yeah, maybe. All right, cool. Yo, everyone, this is going to be a quick new segment where we're going to shout out and read our favorite reviews, because some of you are leaving dope reviews and some of you are not leaving any. So please leave a review.
Why Why you hate us so much?
So one of my favorite reviews says here, it feels like home. I love this podcast. Being an African-American in the tech industry, it feels good to have people that I can relate to. A shout out to you. That's Quee Cool and N via Apple Podcasts in the US. Someone says, Abadesi and Michael bring the informed opinion on the latest tech news from the angle of inclusion and diversity. Super relevant, exclamation mark. And that's from Link Dog.
I love that you also read on the Apple Podcasts.
Got two in it, and here's one. Someone left a freestyle review. I don't want to hear about Kanye every episode. Real talk! Exclamation
mark. Man, we gotta add a new segment all about Ye. No, check it.
Shout out to that person left a freestyle review, but most of them are 5 stars. A recent one, my favorite podcast, such an excellent crossover with pop culture and tech, and that's Francis M96, also via Apple Podcast, based in the UK. Some dope reviews there. Leave a review, please, to get read out and shout it out on the show. And yeah, keep supporting. Peace.
Thank you.
So in this area, we're going to do some shout outs. I want to shout out Killer Mike, aka, I forgot his real name. I think his real name is Michael Render. Michael Render, aka Killer Mike, sorry. He has launched a black-owned mobile bank in tandem with the former Atlanta mayor, Andrew Young, reading out the names, and a few other co-founders. They raised a $3 million seed round, and they're launching real soon. Here's a few stats that probably means why they've launched. Apparently, black Americans are twice as likely to be denied mortgage loans by traditional banks as compared to their white counterparts. Oh. 17% of black Americans don't have a bank account. This is as true as from 2017.
17? And you know what?
Yes, but you know what? The thing is, until I make a lot of content that's America-centric with peopleofcolorintech.com, until I started speaking to founders in that kind of space, I didn't realize, you know, the population of the underbanked in America. I had no idea this like phenomenon was there. There's a large percentage of the US population, disproportionately black, who just don't have bank accounts. Like, and if there's a way of doing it with a mobile app that's seamless, that's quick, that's targeted towards black consumers, why the hell not? It's called Greenwood. Obviously, it's named after kind of the Greenwood District in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Black Wall Street that was famously burnt down by some haters. A mob of white Americans destroyed it. Look up Black Wall Street if you're not familiar with it. But yeah, shout out to Killer Mike. I love seeing this kind of stuff. I'm initially quite skeptical when I see sometimes like these kind of stories, just because like I think Akon kind of ruined my kind of optimism, because the more I looked into like the work that he was doing, and this is a whole different
crypto coin.
Yeah, his crypto coin and the Wakanda. I'm just like, this is sounding fake. I'm not gonna lie, this is sounding like some Umar Johnson. I don't know.
No, I don't think he is. Sorry,
he's not locked up. Yeah, but whenever I see someone like doing something where it just seems too good to be true, unfortunately, I've just grown a bit jaded. But this seems great. And it seems like a worthwhile initiative.
Yeah, financial inclusion, man. I think it's going to be big. This is going to be big. And hopefully, you know, it's not the first entrepreneur to address financial inclusion. But yeah, I think it's really important. I mean, the image of America as a superpower or this incredible country is just really taken a toll in 2020, or, you know, maybe even the past 4 years, really, or maybe longer. But I think financial inclusion is such a huge theme. And knowing, I mean, I didn't know that high percentage of Black Americans that didn't have a bank account, but I think it's really promising. And I think hopefully, like, people within the fintech space will also start to think of other, you know, marginalized or underrepresented communities that also struggle to access financing from the traditional banks, because that's really where the opportunity to be a challenger bank is. Like, you have to
do
what the others don't.
Someone's got to think about these kind of communities, because Coinbase ain't. That's for damn sure.
But
you're right. And I think even for like black entrepreneurs that are, you know, trying to get capital, it must be difficult to try to get one from a traditional bank. So hopefully Greenwood, that's the name of the app, is more of an inclusive space and is more understanding of the situations and struggles that black founders and it's targeted at Latinx people as well, black and Latinx, you know, black and brown founders go through. So shout out to Killer Mike, man, putting that round of applause. So I read an interesting article in the New York Times. Basically, apparently, Black LinkedIn is thriving. This is the title. But does LinkedIn have a problem with that question mark? I was like, what's going on here?
Censorship.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. Obviously, what's happened in the last few months after George Floyd's murder, a lot more people now, especially a lot more black content creators, a lot more black executives are now just speaking more freely with it. And they're just like, you know what? I'm just going to be myself. And LinkedIn obviously has traditionally been a place where it's kind of corporate. It's kind of boring. It's kind of bland. So now people are like, listen, we're going to go in here. We're going to talk that real talk. We're going to call out racism. We're going to throw up some memes. We're going to be ourselves basically on this platform. Now, a few people have had a few posts taken down, essentially LinkedIn moderators who do control the space a lot more than they would do on a Twitter or a Facebook have said, listen, you know, they've shadow banned content and they've taken down content and they flagged content, right? That is essentially anti-racist in nature. Now, yeah. And LinkedIn has come back and said, listen, we've got a lot of black folks who work in these kind of departments as well. So is this the kind of opposite side of the coin where you might say Clubhouse needs moderation? But then once you get moderation, who decides what has to be moderated? And then you might get a whole bunch of white moderators who are like, this is not really right, taking this down. And I think it does show, although there's an easy answer for this to be like, okay, cool, this is crap, stop it. Does it show that it's a very nuanced conversation about moderation on platforms? Because it can go left quite easily. What do you think? I'm throwing this at you.
I personally feel like this is just another example from the world of tech of a problem that can be solved with this simple response of have a diverse team, have a diverse team. We've been saying it. We said it. Other people say it all the time. No one's doing it. Have a diverse team, because TikTok had this issue earlier in the year as well. And then all of the Black content creators were boycotting the platform and saying, hey, we're posting stuff about Black Lives Matter. We're posting stuff about defund the police. We're posting stuff about the murders of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. And it's not trending, or it's not showing up. And this
it's
is
not
weird,
basically.
Yeah. And it's because, well, I mean, whatever argument they had, but here now in the case of Black LinkedIn, you see it again where it's like, oh, this is really interesting. Like, what's being promoted and what's not? And like, fine, yes, there is an algorithm, but everybody knows that every algorithm can also be like tweaked from the back end, and there's God mode and all goodness knows what else is happening. So I think what we're seeing is very similar again to this idea of, like, you know, what Coinbase guy is saying, political. It's like you have brands that are drawing a line in the sand and saying, okay, that might be the stance of other people, but there's someone on the team there, moderation team, that's decided that it's getting all a bit too much, too negative, too political, yeah, too whatever. And they've made a decision to do this. And I just think that to me reflects the lack of, one, allyship and empathy from white employees, mm-hmm, and two, lack of representation of Black employees.
I think you're absolutely right. I think it's interesting because LinkedIn is kind of popping now. I'm not going to lie to you, in the sense that, like, it used to just be the place
around
where you just...
You like it
no,
now.
No, but what I'm saying... No, I mean, yeah, because I used to hate it. Like, I used to be like, yeah, what? Like, I never got it. But I think the whole thing of putting in the feed, the whole thing about making it more content-centric, because I think literally it used to just be a database of resumes. Like, you just go in there and, like, apply for jobs and that was it. But I think now they're seeing the difficulty in having a newsfeed and having, like, anybody be a content creator, because then it's like, whose voice is the authentic voice of your platform? Who gets to have a voice, right? But yeah, watch your space. I'll definitely put the link in the show notes because it's a very interesting article and they spoke to a lot of the content creators that had their stuff taken down and they had a few choice words to say. So yeah, link in the show notes for that one. This episode is also sponsored by Close.com. Close.com is building the sales communication platform of the future. They have built a next-generation CRM that eliminates manual data entry and helps sales teams close more deals. They are currently looking for an account exec to help them build out the most efficient inbound sales funnel in all of SaaS. The position is fully remote for anyone based in the US, and the link is in the show notes. Tell them that Techish was the plug. Peace.
So, an anonymous opinion piece published in Sifted EU on the 9th of October claims that chief diversity officers are pointless. Basically, talks a lot about the fact that there's been an increase in the creation of this role. But if you actually look at the impact of this role, as far as representation in teams, shifting the culture, nothing seems to be changing. For the most part, even though they're executive level positions, unlike their peers, they don't actually have a budget, they don't have headcount, and they don't have real influence in the material workings of the organization, which therefore means they do not deliver the results. So yeah, basically chief diversity officers are pointless. Now, I personally feel the headline is a bit churlish and silly, but before I have my thoughts on this as an actual diversity and inclusion leader in a tech company, Michael, what are you saying?
I don't think it's fair for me to speak first. You speak first, because I think this is your reality. No, this is your reality. Like, so like, okay, just my quick spiel is basically like, I've come at it from the other side where I'm often talking to companies about their efforts and, you know, trying to get them to invest in our platform essentially. And my experience is that chief diversity officers have the least power. They can't do anything. They have no budget. They're literally just there trying to scrape together what they can. So for example, with my platform being transparent, they might say, oh, can we just like get an interview on your platform? And it's like, well, we normally choose our own editorial, and if a company wants to do sponsored content, they got to pay for that. As soon as you say that, they're out of there. They're like, yeah, sorry, bye. And these are companies that are like, they're making money, like they're printing money. So how come that company has $100 billion, but yes, you're here asking for free shit from little old me who's got one or two employees, right?
I empathize with this article because, like a chief diversity officer, my job is to be the leader on all things related to making the org equitable and inclusive and diverse and representative. So this is, for me, an article which isn't saying anything new. This is all stuff that I know and has been said before in Project Include and many, many publications and articles by D&I leaders. There's the closing sentence pretty much sums it up. Until chief diversity officers are valued enough to report to the CEO, be allocated a team and a decent sum of cash to do something tangible with, I'm loath to say nothing will ever change. The role will continue like a merry-go-round going nowhere fast. Mm. I don't think there's anything new to be said there, right? Like, how do we make impact in a business? We have clear goals and we have the resources to achieve these goals. And I think the point that's being made here is that for many companies, that role is a figurehead. They represent something, but they don't have actual real influence or power or resources to effect any change. And I mean, certainly when I was interviewing for my job, I like raised all of these points because I was just like, I mean, this role has to have influence. It has to have buy-in across the organization. Yep. Honestly, the last part is the hardest thing. Like if the CEO and rest of the executive team are not deferring to you as the authority on all things related to inclusion and are not actioning your advice, taking it on board, reflecting on it, starting a dialogue, actually trying to leverage your expertise. I also agree with this article. Why are you there? Are you just there to like massage the egos, to be wheeled out in the event, inevitable event, something racist or otherwise oppressive happens? Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. I mean, I'm not going to lie because I'm just in week 11 of my job. I'm still really new, but I'm thinking a lot about stuff like who we're hiring, like what we're doing. And like certainly in a year from now, if we haven't hired people from underrepresented backgrounds, if the results of our inclusion surveys aren't reflecting more positively and more broadly across the org, I will feel like I have failed. And that's kind of frustrating, right? Because it's like, I know it's not all on me, all of these things, right? Like I can only go so far. And then the rest has to be other people holding themselves accountable to what they've learned and what they've done, as well as also like how much resource do I have, right? My budget's only going to be so many tens of thousands or whatever, hundreds of thousands of dollars. So I know that it's not all on me, but at the same time, it kind of is all on us. Mm-hmm. And that's, I guess, like the messed up thing. And in an ideal world, honestly, this is the world I would love to see. I'm not making this up. People like Diversity VC have written about this, but we need CEOs to feel accountable to belonging, inclusion, representation. And we need boards to hold them accountable to that, shareholders to hold them accountable to that. You should not be able to build a business at all or grow a business that isn't thinking about how to be representative of its community and its customers and how to offer its employees an inclusive culture. Like that should just be a given. And I think that's the only way things are really going to change. So anyway, all the sci-fi fans on the show, because obviously we got so many of them, probably super bummed to hear that Dune, the sci-fi remake by Denis Villeneuve, who did the Blade Runner remake that was supposed to drop this year, has now been postponed to October 2021. This is off the back of the news that Cineworld, one of the largest world cinema chains, is going to be shutting, laying off thousands of people. Of course, this is partly due to lockdown and pandemic. They said it was due to another delay in the latest Bond film in the franchise, that being pushed back. But I mean, come on, like cinema, I know Mulan dropped as via home stream on Disney, but there's nothing like going into the cinema. I know you watched all the Avengers movies, Michael.
Four times.
And I remember, you know, Black Panther, that was such a big event. So what's going to happen? Is this the death of the cinema?
If you know, I was an average cinema goer, but I wasn't really missing it. But only like the last 2 to 3 days where I'm just like, man, I miss them sticky seats. I miss my popcorn. I miss just going into a dark room and just like escaping the world for like immersive. A couple hours. Just immersing yourself. And like, it's just something to do, man. And it's sad. I think, I don't know what the future holds. I'm sad that, you know, I think Christopher Nolan, when he directed Tenet, I think he thought that was going to kind of save cinema. He really pushed for the film to come out in cinema and early because I think they wanted to push it back.
Yeah.
The studio, and I understand why the studio wants to push it back, because they just invested $200 million, and they're like, we need to make sure this gets a return.
When we say it gets a return, $250 million to make one movie.
Yeah, and Nolan had the cachet and is successful enough to say, listen, I want this out now. So they pushed it out. And I think it flopped. They didn't release the numbers. Like, a friend of mine's a filmmaker, so we always have these kind of cinema talks the way me and you have these tech talks. And he was just like, yeah, like, he was meant to kind of be the savior and it didn't work. So now all the other films are just getting pushed back. But the Mulan thing is interesting because someone did like a back of the envelope calculation. So if you were subscribed to Disney is it Disney Plus, right? Disney, yeah. What do you call it? Disney Plus? Yeah, yeah. I doesn't call it Disney Prime. Okay, <confused.
laughs> Wow, you don't have Disney Plus? You're missing out, bro.
I have my friend's account, so I didn't sign up to it. I refused to, yeah. I'm not signing up to nothing new no more. I'm just taking accounts that people did mine. Anyways, yeah, so Mulan, I think based on the $30 fee, I think it made like a solid opening weekend, right? And it made as much money as it would have made in the cinema, but this time they didn't have to split it with the actual cinemas. So I think half the box office goes to the cinema and half goes to the studio, but Disney made all of the same amount of box office, but they get to keep 100% of it as opposed to splitting it with the studio. So is the model for going forward is, yo, it's $30. You want to watch the next Avengers? Pay $50, $100. Maybe that's the model. I don't want it to be the model. I like going to the cinema. I miss it.
It's not the same watching from home. This is the thing. But
would you feel safe going to one now?
Dude, I went to see Tenet. I went to the IMAX. Oh, I went.
You're taking risks to spread the disease. How dare you,
Emma? I did my COVID test today. Look, I am a patron of the arts, okay?
Irresponsible.
I have my mask. I had my hand sanitizer. I was hyped. Well, first of all, IMAX, obviously premier cinematic experience. And if you haven't had a chance to watch a movie in IMAX, go. I went to the one in London at the South Bank, largest cinema screen in the UK. It's the height of 3 double-decker buses, in case you didn't know. I was excited. I'm a big Christopher Nolan fan. I was excited to see my man Denzel's son, David Washington, on the screen, the Black Klansman star. How many big budget films have a black male lead?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like what, Independence Day? That was like 20 years ago. I mean, it's just not enough.
Can I be controversial though? I actually don't like him as an actor.
Oh,
I find it to be
God.
So boring. But the thing is, what? I'm so happy, yeah. Because I watched him in Black Klansman and I was like, he has not got his dad's charisma, and we can't pretend that he does.
Oh,
let's not front
wow.
like he's Denzel.
Oh,
he ain't Denzel.
God. He's not his own style.
But listen, I'm happy that
you don't have black folks.
Yeah, I don't have my dad's charisma. That's true. But I'm happy that as black folks, you know, we can use nepotism and be average and make money. And that's literally what I like. When I see him, I'm happy for him. So I'm like, you're not your dad, but because of nepotism, you're in. So good for you. Make your money. But anyways, what was your view of the film? Because I heard it was really confusing. Did you enjoy it?
First of all, when it is like a sci-fi or a time travel film, it doesn't have to make sense to me, okay? I'm thinking of that German series on Netflix, Dark, which is also very good.
I've heard about that.
I'm talking about seasons of HBO Westworld. I like them. They look good. Did I know what was going on most of the time? No, I had to watch the YouTube explainer. Look, I'm a sci-fi fan, and part of being a sci-fi fan is that willing suspension of disbelief. Like, I don't believe it, and it doesn't make sense to me. Was it confusing? Yes. Did that, you know, hamper my enjoyment of it or hinder it
no.
in any way? Hell no. It was great. I really liked it. And it was incredible seeing it in the IMAX. Just such a feast for the eyes. And I, for one, am very sad that cinema is dying. I just think, generally speaking, we have a real existential threat to arts and culture right now. People are even being encouraged to retrain here in the UK. Some interesting controversial statements from some of the leaders of our government. I don't know, man. I just think the future is going to be bleak AF unless we really do our best to save the arts and culture. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of your favorite podcast, Techish. It's been incredible covering all the latest stories with you. And as usual, we want to hear from you. Please leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts and jump into the conversation on Twitter using hashtag Techish. Tell us what you think, because that matters more than Michael's opinion to me, if I'm honest.
You sound like my mum. But anyways, yeah, so Techish, yeah, like, let us know what's your thoughts on retirement, on wealth building, chief diversity officers, Clubhouse. We want to hear from you. All right, cool.
Bye.
Catch you next week. Bye.